Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. I am really excited to introduce our guest today. He's Neil Kozarski, the CEO and second generation to lead THEM, which stands for Technical Help in Engineering and Marketing. Neil is a pioneer in the world of single serve packaging, having introduced stick packaging to North America, a move that transformed industries from beverage to personal care. Under his leadership, THEM has become synonymous with innovation, building long-term relationships with some of the most recognizable global brands. Known for his visionary approach and commitment to excellence, Neil has guided THEM to the forefront of flexible packaging. His passion and dedication to pushing the industry forward have made him a sought-after contributor to industry trade media and a frequent speaker at major packaging conferences and events. Neil, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And that's a really nice intro, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. So take me back to the beginning. Did you always plan on joining THEM, or did you consider other paths before deciding to step into the family business?
I don't know if you could say it was officially preordained. I would say that as I was getting a bachelor's degree and completing that part of my preparation, that I was thinking about it. But at that time, my mother, the THEM started in 1973, so here it is, it's 1978. I'm thinking that might not be a bad place to go. Mm-hmm. And my father was definitely thumbs up. He wanted it to happen. My mother's opinion was rather that I should get my legs under me. I should go somewhere else first and avoid the pitfalls of starting as a vice president and working my way down. So I did have a chance to have some really good experiences in other businesses before I came to THEM. And I would say the second one was really an important one. So was it preordained? I would say close to, but it actually came into a little bit of doubt when another opportunity started to really turn into a good potential opportunity for me.
I see. And was that other opportunity, was that also in the field of packaging, or was that in a different industry?
No, I took a job with a company that was in packaging, industrial and food service packaging, for my first year and a half out of college. And it was really good. It exposed me to packaging. The company knew that they found out that my parents had founded a packaging company, not exactly competitive, but I think they figured out that I was going to wind up there eventually. So they worked me pretty hard and I got a pretty good experience. I would say it was a great foundation. And one of the customers that I had picked up when I was working for this company turned out to be a major important company. It was Hamilton Avnet. I was involved with selling microcomputer chips, electronics. And it was during that period that I recognized that a lot of what I was selling was this thing called Intel. This is take it back to 1980, 79. And it really gave me a good perspective that if you had something that was really valuable, Hamilton Avnet leveraged that very valuable brand in its sales, and they didn't have to do a lot of manufacturing. They weren't burdened with that. So I took that away, and I guess somehow, some way, I filed away that I was looking for something like an Intel in my future career. And at the time that I was working for Hamilton, and I had started to stand out and distinguish myself, broke through in a couple of major accounts. I thought I was about to start making some money. I got a really good offer from another company in a related part of the industry. And at that point, I was tapped by THEM, and they said, okay, we don't want to lose them. So they brought me on board in 1980. That's how I came to THEM. It was a little bit indirect, and it turned out to be really good and important part of the experience.
I have to say, for this echoes some of the sentiments of a lot of other guests, that a lot of times they will go off and do something first before joining the family business. And I think having that opportunity leads to a richer start, because some of us, like myself, I predominantly know one experience, and that's Dalia Associates. You had the opportunity to see the world a bit, to see other business models and business circumstance, and potentially bring that knowledge to the company in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, definitely. And everybody's experience is going to be different, but you're right. In some cases, it's just a natural thing. In others, it seems after 45 years of doing this, that there's a randomness to it and then an incredible feel of destiny to it. So, if that makes any sense.
Sounds like a future book title.
Mark it down.
So then certainly for a period of those years, you and your mom and your dad overlapped in the business.
Yeah. Okay. That's a bit of an understatement and quite true.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's often a unique dynamic when you have multiple family members under the roof in a business. So how would you say you were able to balance maintaining, you know, family, the family values, while striving to drive innovation and growth in THEM? How did you find that? How did you all find that balance?
Yeah, the overlap was really, it was good. I was really ready for the experience, I would say. And dealing with mom and dad became Elliot and Joan, the co-founders of the company. It was definitely, it's something, as people watching are aware, there's a delicate balance when you say family business and working for your parents. There's this rule that says you separate family and business. Never talk about family when you're doing business, et cetera. That's a joke. It doesn't work that way. So we pretty much established. My father was a pretty clear in his leadership. He was definitely a general, definitely supported by a co-equal with my mother. He made it very clear to me what his expectations were of me. So even though the company was quite a bit different in terms of its mission, the one thing that I think was really important that helped me from the start was the values and principles of the company were made clear. When you're a family business, they started the business in 73. It's a matter of it's your family name. The company is named THEM, but it's your family, it's your character, it's your integrity. And it was made very clear to me how I was to conduct myself. And I always knew there were advantages to having the last name and there were disadvantages. I didn't get any accounts to start with and things like that. But I think because the company at that time was just starting to grow up, there was a feeling of some smallness at that time. They didn't want people. I didn't call them mom and dad. I was supposed to call them by their first names, as if nobody knew what the relationships were. But it really wound up being pretty good, because there was no doubt who was in charge. There was no doubt what the culture of the company was about. And that was something that I really felt comfortable engaging with and starting a career with.
Nice. So along the way, you discovered this interesting packaging format called the single serve flexible stick package. And we're very much a trailblazer in bringing that innovation to North America. So I have to ask, what sparked your interest in this format? And how did you see that as an impact on the U.S. market back then? What was your vision and how did that come to be?
It's both that randomness and the destiny, because I had been with the company for 12 years before the first trip happened to Japan. Mm-hmm. Our first experience doing business in Japan was in 1992. And the reason that we were there, just for the audience to know, we talk all the time about inflection points. Mm-hmm. Usually you can't tell what an inflection point is until it's behind you that it happened. There's a lot of things we think are going to be inflection points, but with me and with Stick Packaging, I had already, and the company had been involved with Japan since 1992, a couple of major customers started to ask about innovative single serve in 1996. And I have to say this, I had already, since 1992, been going into convenience stores and grocery stores. I'm like you, Ed, I'm a packaging geek, and I'm very boring to shop with unless you're part of the club. And I was seeing these innovative, elegant formats on the shelves for some really nice upscale cocoa, soluble tea, and coffee. And I honestly didn't know exactly what it meant, but it was exhilarating in a way I can't even really put into words. You've heard me say before, it was the aisles of my dreams. I didn't really know exactly what I was looking at, but somehow, and now I can say in hindsight, I got the chance in the 90s to look at the future. That's how it happened. Was aware of the package, and then when a couple of major customers said they wanted to take a look at launching some new product line extensions in something innovative and single serve, it all converged and came together. And it started in about 1996 when we established a relationship with Sonco. And it definitely was somewhat random, but it was a total game changer. It took decades to really understand what that transformation of the business was going to ultimately look like. It certainly evolved over time, but discovering that format and then having an incredible team around me, as well as brilliant brand clients, to understand how to transform this innovative stick packaging format into something that could really be differentiating and valuable in North America. It's probably to date, I guess it's our legacy as a company. And while there are so many people that helped to make it happen, that I got the description of the father of stick packaging in North America, it's not as important as the other three kids, but I'll take it. It's pretty something to be proud of.
So we often hear from brands that they want innovation, they want the new thing, they want excitement. So they say that, and then the other challenge is ultimately getting them across the finish line to go to market with something new. So what was the biggest challenge in ultimately making it happen? Like they all say, yeah, we want innovation, we want something new. But then when the rubber hits the road, they're like, there's that freeze and there's that pause and there's that fear maybe. So how did you get some of those initial brands over that hump to say, all right, let's go
Yeah,
to market with
great
this
question.
format?
Well, we all know that there's a part of many companies that are very entrepreneurial and they want to do new things with new innovation. And then there are people who put the no into innovation, and we have to deal with those folks. What was helpful about us and introducing Stix in North America was that the client companies themselves, in a couple of cases, already had experience with stick packaging in other parts of the world, for example, in Japan and other parts of Asia. So they recognized that the sticks were an interesting strategic option. One of the clients in particular said that they knew about sticks, but they weren't going to do anything with stick pack unless they had a partner, US-based, that could help them with the map to market and the commercialization. So I would say a couple of critical things. One is the recognition of Sonco, who's been our partner for 29 years, that they were a leading company. They invented stick packaging. That was in our favor. The fact that a key brand was already using stick pack was in our favor. And then we did have an inflection point. We stood up with, at that time, a partner, and we invested in some initial production equipment so that we didn't require the clients to put serious capital into launching and experimenting at that time with stick packaging. So it was really a combination of the best attributes of an entrepreneurial organization like us working with a large corporate brand, which quickly became brands, to have a first to market advantage with a unique format. And there's so many other things that had to happen. In the background, of course, you had on-the-go consumers who were using a lot of bottled water. And I wish I could say it was me who came up with this, but the words that really changed everything were when a brilliant team said, "You can wake up your water with stick packaging." And at that point, it went viral. And I would say also to finally answer your question, that what was very important about this commercialization was it helped us to establish a business model that was sensitive to brands that didn't want to invest a lot of money up front to test a format, and us being able to have a model that is scalable so that if you are fortunate, the product gains traction, which didn't happen overnight, but it happened pretty quickly, you have an ability to scale. So yeah. I think having a good partner, awareness of their excellence in other parts of the world, and us setting up a model that worked for the clients, I think really helped to make it happen.
So it was very much early on something of a calculated risk you took by making those investments, and but doing it with very, what it sounds, very sound relationships who had already had some level of exposure to the format, which probably helped in the decision-making to go forward and push go.
It did. Now, it was really a good collaboration.
Now, speaking of collaboration, how united were you with your mom and dad in terms of this venture? Were you all fairly united in saying, yes, this is an opportunity, let's go for it? Or was there some back and forth going on to convince them, let's say, to go forward with this?
Yeah, there were some real challenges there. While there was a real excitement about the possibility of bringing something like this to market, we'd never done anything like this before. I would say that the one challenge I got from my father, he in the beginning stages, he wasn't that happy about it. He said, I'm not disputing the fact that there could be some real opportunity associated with stick packaging in Japan. But can't you find something that's a little closer than 7,000 miles away? That was the challenge. And yeah. I actually had some other people in the organization or external in the organization who were advisors and consultants, which we could talk about for a second too. I think it's important that family businesses have trusted advisors that can step in at times when there's a dispute or a conflict, but it became evident pretty quickly. I wasn't turning back. There were a couple of times when people have said, when things started to transition with me rising in the company, was it smooth and was everything immediately accepted? The answer is sometimes the baton transfer is not the way you would imagine. And I'm not going to go, but you get the idea. But
sure.
It was pretty soon after we started to gain some traction that we recognized that we were onto something really unprecedented. And based on the company's philosophy, which mm-hmm. is to build upon strong relationships with key clients, the key mm-hmm. clients were really there supporting what we were doing, albeit with less capital exposure, but that yeah. really became an important part of the commercialization model. So was there a little bit of resistance? Yep. And I think they asked some really good questions, but a third party helped us to set up some non-emotional business criteria, business objectives, and I had to meet those objectives to continue on with this business. So
excellent.
There were some challenges, and it didn't happen overnight. We joke and we say this was an overnight success that only took about 10 or 12 years, and we're still working to improve it and continue to make it better. But yeah, there were some challenges. And as others in your audience, I'm sure, is aware, it can be very difficult when you have solid, well-intentioned, good faith disagreement. And then you really have to have some discipline and focus and determine how you're going to proceed. But it was totally a game changer for our company.
Awesome. Awesome. So a lot of times, I think when we go out to the greater world, sometimes Americans are thought of or perceived as a bit arrogant, let's say. Yet you've always, I think, looked at the lens of packaging or global packaging with, I think, natural curiosity, but great humility to recognize that, hey, the best of the best may not be sitting on this soil right now. The best of the best might be in Japan. And if memory serves, there's been other continents that you've explored for innovation. So can you talk a little bit about your perspectives in the landscape of global packaging and how that's shaped what THEM has become today?
Yeah, I think packaging it's a great platform upon which I know we can't use this trademark, but to bring good things to life. I think that might be a problem if we try to use that. Your audience might remember that catchphrase. But there is something about packaging. There is something about working with different cultures where, easy to say, but I guess just my personality type, I really do believe that different is different, and it doesn't mean better or worse. Different is mm-hmm. different. As I've now had over 150 trips over to Japan, where I'm speaking to you from now,
Yeah.
it's been very helpful for me to really begin to understand what some of the differences are and how some of the challenges that have to be faced in the Japanese market, which is in some ways it's very similar, but in some ways it couldn't be more different than the US. But the packaging industry and some of the people that I've had the great pleasure to work with actually introduced me to a concept of packaging as a global gateway. And that global gateway includes sharing of knowledge, sharing of best practices, sharing of insights about each other's cultures, what it is that unites us in terms of how brand companies have to view consumers, and what some of the differences are, and how we can't do things literally. But I think when we started to recognize that while it might have been somewhat inadvertent that Japan had to satisfy a very different consumer in terms of how demanding they are, in terms of what their expectations were, but we were able to look at some of these opportunities, stick probably being one of the best examples, and to Americanize and to look for applications where the US consumer could benefit from some of the use occasion challenges that the Japanese brands were working with. You have a consumer here in Japan who is very demanding in a positive way. They're probably going to be eating two or three meals on the go. That means the packaging has to be very good for mobile on the go. They're very fastidious about not making a mess, not having things spill or
Yeah.
leak. Those values are very important. So, from a personality standpoint, I found it was very easy for me to work with my partners who have become forever friends after 30 years in Japan. And we're continuing to identify opportunities here that are with our customers, with our brand clients, and with our expertise, we're still able to find opportunities that can be really important for US consumers in our mission, which is to be a leader in single-serve packaging.
Excellent. So THM obviously is known for being very agile, very innovative, but you also maintain some really long-standing partnerships and relationships with suppliers, with customers. So sometimes those two can be at odds, being cutting edge and stable at the same time. How do you balance those two in the business?
Yeah, and it's a really key point, Ed. The idea of the founding principles of the company, even in the name Synergetics, the idea of element A and element B combining to have a greater net effect, it's critical. The business is really based upon relationships. We really try not to be transactional. We really try to identify opportunities to establish partnering relationships. And while I've been along for the ride for 45 of the 52 years that have come, it really can be challenging. There are times when certainly your own interests as a business conflict with those of a partner. What do you do when that happens? And what I'm really proud of over the decades with the company is if you really stick to your principles, you can have disagreements, but if you have integrity and you're open and transparent, doesn't mean you can tell everybody everything all the time. Sometimes an important supplier is a competitor at the same time. But I think the most important thing is, particularly if you're a family business, starting out is your name and your integrity means everything. And it's a matter of always doing the right things, especially when no one's watching. And it doesn't necessarily help in a short term, but being part of a family business and looking at things on a long-term basis, we don't have to be judged on a quarterly basis. We really think about things on a long-term basis. And I guess evidence of that is we have a 30-year relationship and close to that with overseas companies, particularly in Japan. A lot of people will say, oh, there's communications issues, there's cultural issues. True and true. But that's not the end of the story. That's the beginning of the conversation. And our ability as an organization to be able to get the best attributes of more than one culture, I think the results are self-explanatory. It really creates a uniqueness for us as a company, and our clients absolutely do recognize that having 30-year relationships with leading companies overseas, it says a lot about your own culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point. Whereas some people get frustrated with the culture divide, you've taken more of a position of let's understand and adapt and meet them halfway, and they'll meet us halfway. And I think that yielded what sounds like an amazing long-term partnership that sustains to this day. That's really amazing.
It truly is. Because it takes much longer. Everything takes much longer than you would ordinarily expect. And I think that long-term relationships, and particularly being open to new ideas, I think it says a lot about your organization when you're able to do that. And it really opens up some doors that otherwise wouldn't be there.
True. THEM, as it's structured, it's a very agile company. It's very innovative. It's very progressive in many ways. So it certainly allows for, I'll say, probably faster decision-making compared to larger entities. Can you give me an example where that agility gave you a competitive advantage?
Yeah, I would say it's really important. When we first started commercializing and introducing stick packaging some years ago, we were working with some supply chain partners that were owned by larger companies. Mm-hmm. And when the window of opportunity opened for some line extension launches involving stick pack, the other companies were locked up in terms of they needed to get committees and other teams of people together to make certain decisions. Well, that wasn't going to work. There was a window of opportunity. We recognized that. So we were able to bring decision makers, ownership into the room, and we were able to work quickly and we were able to make decisions quickly. It really does happen all the time now, too. It's very difficult to have contracts stay completely current with the way actual business is running. It requires of you an ability to have some flexibility, to be nimble, to have some financial strength, and to be selective in terms of who you believe when they make a promise. And I think that was really a key point for us, that we were able to engage that way.
Awesome. So at some point in the journey, I also overlapped with my dad in the business for a number of years. You overlapped with your parents. At what point did they start to step away and say, okay, Neil's got this? Did that happen formally, or was that sort of organic where they started to step back and say, all right, he's got the wheel of the ship. He's good. Oh, no, you froze on me.
Now, we would both tell you.
There you go. Go ahead. Say
we
that
would
again.
Tell you the truth, and I would say, yeah, if my father was standing right next to me and you said, at what point did Neil actually take over? Our answers would be delivered with honest intentions, but there might be a 5 to 10 year gap between them. I would say when it became apparent that the business was taking more of a global direction, and that we were starting to do things that were starting to gain traction and that were really requiring us to go further. So it's probably at the time when one of our clients introduced the Wake Up Your Water, and 2 or 3 years later, it went viral. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I think there was a recognition that everything that my parents had really wanted to accomplish, their legacy was established as innovators, as pathfinders, as a company that really wanted to establish long-term, large relationships with major brands and suppliers and going international. I think at that point, plus the harvesting began to happen. I would say it was probably around 2003, 2004 when it happened. I was a 20-year veteran, but they maintained their involvement, and it was great because of their expertise, their passion. There are so many people, even today, who are still in the company who remember the early days. We've had people who've been with us well over 30 years of the 52. So it was really after some of the real stress and anxiety of making some of the bold moves that when they started to recognize that the ship was really steady and that the future looked pretty bright, and that, yes, while Japan is 7,000 miles away, it's possible.
Yes, it is. And certainly the ship has grown substantially under your watch, so I'm sure that was gratifying for them to see the growth and evolution of the company into a much bigger entity than its humble origins. So
Yeah,
I'm sure that was.
and the I would have to say too, the complimentary way, in other words, as I said, I really did embrace and genuinely the values and culture of the company. They also loved mentoring and helping to create relationships, not only with suppliers and our clients, but also to create a company where you really have an opportunity to reach whatever potential you're capable of achieving. And there are numerous examples in the company today, not only in the top leadership, but we have some incredible stories that are international in scope, where we've identified people with leadership capabilities. We help them in any way that we can with further education. We're not going to limit them when they identify opportunities to move up. So I think my parents felt very comfortable that not only was the company in a growth mode, but also that we were remaining true to our values and the culture of the company. And I think that's really, it's a key factor, not only in a smooth transition, but also in being able to have a company that, forgive the expression, is built to last.
Yes. And I think that's a huge point you made, and one that's been echoed by many other successful businesses that transition from one generation to the next. There's something of a maintenance of those core establishing values that are carried forward, but every new generation needs to look for that next evolution of the company too, and find their own vision, which I think in many ways you've certainly done that in grand fashion.
And I've been very fortunate, and you've had a chance to meet a number of the people. We've had an
Great team.
opportunity, the team that we have that is really making things happen. And I just asked HR before coming on with you this morning, we're at about 457 employees. And so many of the people that we are growing with have been with us for a really long time throughout the platforms of clients, partners, and employees. And I think it speaks volumes about the company that, hey, things aren't always great, but I believe that your audience would recognize that one of the things that happened when COVID occurred a few years ago was a crisis like that will really reveal a company. It will really reveal its culture. And for our company, we were very fortunate that we were able, we it really brought out the best of our team. And it really demonstrated to our clients that we were able to really back up what we said that we could do. And we were safe. Nobody got hurt. We had some people that got sick, but no, thank God, we didn't have any fatalities. We didn't miss a day. And we built out a new operation for a customer that was scaling at that point in the middle of the pandemic. So when people recognize that you're really there for them, a key value is we really value sharing success. We really value having the strongest people being able to achieve higher positions in the company. And that's one of the things that gives me the most joy is seeing people become more and more successful and learning how to manage that kind of success, because those are the people that's going to be the difference between success and failure, is those relationships.
Absolutely. And really, the measure of a company is it's sometimes it's easy to run a company when everything's great, but when things are turbulent, like an episode like COVID, then you really find out what you're made of and what your people are all about. And when I do a look back on that, we all lost people. We all lost people we loved in this world. But in some ways, I also felt that moment also brought us closer together, even though in many cases we had to be far apart. We, in many
Yeah.
cases, saw a lot of companies come together stronger. We certainly did. It sounds like your organization pulled together in a very positive way to meet the needs, because there were needs. And really, the entire consumer supply chain was certainly, it was a moment to step up. And I think all of you did. THEM and all of your colleagues and partners in the world really said, this is a time to step up and meet the need. And that was really a great moment for the industry, I think.
Yeah, for the entire industry. And the Rodney Dangerfield, several of my colleagues have always said, you've heard packaging doesn't get the due amount of respect. All of us knew that we were an essential business well before the pandemic, but a lot of lights were shined on how important it is what we do. And as a company, we're proud of that. We don't want to trumpet that too much because, hey, okay, we're doing our jobs and things like that. But we really are proud of that, that when things really got tough, we recognize that some of the things, now again, there's a randomness to single serve packaging. That's the area that we want to lead. It just so happens that it's got to be hygienic, it's got to be clean, it's got to be tamper evident, it's got to be portion controlled, et cetera. All of those things turned out to be incredibly important attributes of products and packages during the pandemic, but something that we were able to go the extra to just whatever it took to try to keep things going while keeping people safe, it really was important. And I think a lot of companies, you said it very well, Ed, I think our industry stepped up miraculously and shined a deserved light on what we do.
For sure. So looking to the present and a bit to the future now. So there's generation three is now in the building, so to speak. You've got the third generation involved in THEM. So talk about what excites you about their involvement now, and are there any initiatives or things they're working on that they're passionate about, or where do you see that next generation playing a role in the future?
Yeah, it's really important. Every position in the company needs a successor. You need a today plan just in case something unforeseen happens, and you need a longer term plan, and you need a structured succession in every business. I would say that the introduction of my older son into the business, largely driven by our president, Steve, was something that I can't say that I was resistant to. But I certainly felt that I benefited from my initial years not being in THEM. And Paul had an opportunity to gain some very valuable experience with a major converter in the United States for almost 10 years. So he brings that to the company, which really helps. I think the timing is really good. I think I am still providing some really important elements to the business as its CEO. And Steve and his team are doing incredible things. As I said to you, when I saw stick packaging on the shelves of stores in Japan in the 90s, I didn't know it at the time, but I was given an opportunity to see the future. And I've been in Japan now on this trip, but I was here a couple of months ago. I would say some of the things that I'm seeing, that we are seeing, and that we're looking at on behalf of our clients are just another master class being presented by the Japanese in innovative, flexible packaging. And so when I say that, what am I talking about more specifically? I'm talking about snack packaging. I'm talking about responsible use of packaging where you use the absolute least amount of materials possible. Don't say sustainable because that can have a lot of different meanings. But what I'm saying is that in the last several months, I believe that I'm seeing the future again for the United States. And my role in it is going to be completely different than it was with stick packaging. So I see Paul, and he went on, he got his master's degree in finance. He brings experience and knowledge and some education. He's passionate. He's getting along really well with our leadership team. And I would say that what's really exciting is I think that the next 5 to 10 years for the US market are going to be ideal for how THEM has been positioned as, if not the A leader in single serve packaging. And what Paul recognizes is, unlike the earlier days where it was somewhat of a narrow focus, hey, we're looking to put beverage packaging into stick packs. It's opened up now. Now the mission of the company is to lead in single serve packaging. And it's dry, it's liquid, it's food, it's pharma. We are registered and inspected by FDA for CFR 210, which is drug. And our ability to take as much as I was able to take what my parents had established and set up for me, I believe that there's an analogous situation for Paul where he's really going to have an opportunity with the organization to follow the same principles, stay true to the founding culture of the company, built on long-term relationships. A lot of the companies that we're working with have been with us since day one. They're still with us today. I can't wait to see what these opportunities are. I'll continue to support and resource it. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I think he's going to have a great opportunity in front of him. And it's interesting to see. And yeah, who would have thought? Third generation.
That's wild. That's wild. And it's been an amazing journey so far, and so many great takeaways from today's conversation. Last question. If any of our listeners wanted to learn more about you or more about the work that THEM is doing, what's the best way for them to connect, Neil?
I would say if you can find me, which shouldn't be too hard, on LinkedIn, my contact information is there. And if you get in touch with me through my email is usually the best start, and I'd be happy to respond. And Ed, I've enjoyed this. You've asked a lot of good questions, and there's the short answer and the long answer. If I've touched on any nerves or any dynamics that are of interest to your audience, don't hesitate. Reach out to me and I will get back. I promise.
Awesome. Awesome. Neil, thank you so much for taking your time to share your journey and your insights today. Again, we've been speaking with Neil Kozarsky, the CEO of THEM, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us and have a wonderful day. Neil, thank you so much again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at dalianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.